Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ham.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Blackhawks may never lose again.
Seven straight. I'm good with that. They're fun to watch again. When you watch them beat the Red Wings on the United Center home ice, you feel like there's a sense of pride that people have, and especially because it's the Red Wings. They don't play them enough anymore.
Five goals, five Chelsea daggers.
They're doing things at the right times. They're doing things with a little bit of flair. They're doing things the way the Hawks used to do things. To me, one of the more significant things over the weekend was not what happened during the game, but what happened at practice on Saturday. Corey Crawford back on the ice, a little bit of a surprise, and if they continue to win at a high enough clip with 26 games left to be in the playoff hunt, his possible return, very interesting.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Did you see that dunk on Markkanen with the left hand with authority?
47 to 41, Wizards. Left hand dribble drop. Parker with a dunk. Oh my goodness, Jabari Parker.
Those guys had a real benefit playing against the guys on their team. It didn't surprise me that the Wizards won that game.
I was like Bobby Boucher and the water boy.
H2O.
I took all the faces off because I love those guys. And, it was somebody else's face.
You're drinking the wrong water.
One person from 708 is saying that the Bears are going to keep pick number 8 and select Bobby Boucher from South Carolina. Or make that South Central Louisiana State University. Somebody from an area that is not all that well known.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Wow. That was very funny.
That was a classic moment.
Yes, there are a lot of classics.
Draft recapped history.
Yeah, so... let's be honest about it. The Blackhawks winning 7 in a row, they remain in the cellar in the Central Division. It's not like they've passed some teams, but it's not like they're assured of anything at this point. But 7 in a row is pretty good. The Blues have won 6 in a row. Okay, I thought they had won more than that. They're hot too, and the Hawks need to keep it up. They need to continue to move if indeed they want to make the playoffs. But they're fun to watch, and they play again at the Bruins Tuesday night. And they've been 7 in a row, as we talked about, 4 points out of the second wild card spot, which is shared by the Wild and the Blues now. Do you look at when a team is winning like this? Do you look at it as just sort of a hot patch, is something that will be hard to continue, or do you think that this could be the way that their season goes? They could actually do some damage and get themselves in a playoff picture. And
26 games left. There's a lot of time left.
A lot of hockey. Go right or wrong.
It's a fluky game. I would not have thought I would be saying this 2 weeks ago before the streak started, but I do think the Hawks are in a position where they might be able to make this interesting. They could sneak into the playoffs. It's not inconceivable at all. It's one of those things where they are getting their top two lines are performing at a high level every single night. When you get secondary scoring, you're not reliant on one line. You can do a lot of things. And they're actually getting some pretty good production and pretty good play throughout their lineup. And I think their D-men are playing a lot better too. I think that's the other factor that's contributed, is that they're getting decent goaltending. I bet better than average goaltending, but I think that their defensemen have been improved, and they're adjusting to the subtle change in, you know, philosophy defensively from Joe Quenneville's zone approach to more of a man approach with Jeremy Colleton. It's taken some time. He's a young coach, but he is making his presence felt very subtly, but significantly.
And that second line, Cahoon with two goals and an assist yesterday, and Strome had a goal and two assists, and Cat with three assists. I think that's his first three-assist game.
Second straight 28-goal season. This is a guy that when they drafted him, you were like, eh, boy.
Too short. Undersized guy.
Undersized guy. Just has a knack, has a natural skill at scoring goals. Some guys just have it, and he does.
Yeah, this is a black cat.
They were talking about
him. He's been lucky for the Hawks.
Was it in the post game? They were talking about if you redrafted that draft, mm-hmm. where he would go. And it would be, you know, he's played significantly better than anticipated because, again, he's a kid from Michigan, grew up outside Detroit, and playing the Red Wings has to be a real thrill for a guy like that.
Absolutely. And let's not, you cannot overstate the impact that Dylan Strome has had.
Yes.
And he's a guy that made no impact in Arizona. He was an underachiever. He was on the market because of that. He's 21 years old, and this is somebody who comes into your organization with something to prove. And the chemistry that he developed with DeBrincat and Erie, as part of the OHL.
They played a couple years together.
Yeah. Connor McDavid was also part of that. But I think
bring him in too.
That wouldn't be bad. He could always get better. Yeah. You know, and so the overarching question is always going to be, February 25th is a trade deadline. We just passed the NBA trade deadline. The Bulls made a really good deal for them in their future. What if you're the Hawks? What do you do if you're Stan Bowman? Are you motivated to look at this scenario and say, okay, you know, we need this, we need that. Let's go ahead and maybe roll the dice, go for a veteran, give up a young guy, and maybe we go for it this year. Or do you go the opposite way? Say, well, this is a mirage. This is seven games. It's nice. We got a young coach, developing team. Let's get rid of some veterans for some prospects.
I don't know that I would. I mean, who are you going to get rid of as veterans, right? I mean, when you really stop and look at who would have trade value if Corey Crawford were back, could you trade Cam Ward? Cam Ward's been one of the reasons for this turnaround.
He's been
really good.
Yeah.
So, that's start at the back. If you have a chance to get a deal for Brent Seabrook to get that money off your roster, which apparently you don't, and he's not interested in giving up what do they call it? It's not a no trade, but it's
no movement clause.
No movement clause.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's one that's
about. That's one of those hockey things. No movement clauses.
But yes.
It's a sweater, not a jersey. It's a dressing room, not a locker room.
Exactly. I'm just saying. It's the same concept.
Thing. Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that if you could do that, that doesn't damage your season. That
it does.
Turn you believe it does?
I think it does. I think you stand pat if you're Stan right now.
Okay.
Sitting here on February 11th.
And again, I'm not sitting here telling you that you got to get rid of a defenseman, but if you could, don't you have to consider that, regardless of where you're at? They have young defensemen. I mean, you know, who was the kid that came up? They had to send him back down to the minors.
Henry Yokiyaru.
I'm
surprised he's not part of this. I'm really surprised he's not part of this.
Why are you surprised?
Because he started the season, showed some promise. He left the team for national team obligations. Uh-huh. And he's a guy that is going to be a very good NHL player. He started the season looking like a very solid NHL defenseman.
He's 19. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, sometimes you just need some more seasoning. But they have drafted a defenseman, young defenseman, for the last few years here. They got a lot of young guys that will be coming up in the next year or two.
Adam Boqvist.
That's another one.
Draft pick, first rounder.
Right.
Look, I think that if you have an opportunity, some texter points out a rumor that we talked about on Friday. Artem Anisimov has been on the market. He's a guy that is a high salary guy. That's as much of a contractually motivated move as anything. If you have an opportunity to trade him to a team that might be able to use him in a different way, because his role has been a little bit diminished with the emergence of that second line with the Strome line, and you know, the obviously with the front line of Kanan Taves on the top line. So Anisimov is expendable. But at the same time, I don't know. You got a good thing going right now. You have a team that's responded to your new coach.
Right.
And I would keep it going.
And nobody cares about draft pick stuff. Nobody is asking the Blackhawks to tank. It's just not the way things are done, certainly not with Toews and Kane. Then you look at where the Bulls are at, totally different story. They make the deal for Otto Porter Jr., and he has a nice debut. Doesn't play poorly in the second game. Looks like a guy that that can play, flat-out play. So that's nice to see that they have a guy that, that solves the problem, shifts a need, if you will. And again, two different teams, two different, what would you call it, goals for the season in the minds of their fans.
Hawks want to make the playoffs.
I think the Hawks want to make
the playoffs. The Bulls
want
to be the worst.
I think Hawk fans want them to. And I think the Bulls don't want to be making the playoffs, and Bulls fans clearly don't want them to.
How much significance do you place between third and fourth if you're the Bulls? Is that a 1.5% difference in terms of your lottery odds? Is that a significant difference to you? 1.5%. That's what they're looking at.
It's not as spectacular as you would hope, but there you have it. All right. You got the Illinois winning some good basketball games. They've had a couple of big upsets. We're going to bring Brad Underwood in. We're going to talk to him about the Illini season, the young players they have in the future, and we'll
talk
about what's going on in college basketball as well. There's some changes going on there. We'll ask him about that. Brad Underwood next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Here's the inbound. Harper for a three. Missed it. Rebound. DeSumo. That's going to be the ball game. Illinois will survive. 99-94 over Rutgers.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. We're delighted to welcome in Brad Underwood, the Illini basketball coach. A couple of really big wins to go ahead and beat Michigan State is pretty astounding. 79-74 last week, and then to come back and handle Rutgers, that is really a sort of confirmation of the first victory, if you will. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Good morning, Coach.
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Well, we're really enjoying the turnaround you guys are going through, especially with the young players that you have. What are your thoughts about the way this team has been growing since the start of the season?
Well, you just said it. We've grown, and we've never stopped. Our schedule was so challenging early that we really had kind of the wind knocked out of our sails a little bit. But yet it speaks to the character of this group. They keep working. We've got an unbelievable locker room. These guys are very, very close, and they work. And this feels a little bit like a year one. Because we have so many new faces and so many young guys, but we're able to establish our foundation, our basement, so to speak, and then we've just kept building, and the result of that is continued better play and young guys becoming confident, and when they get confident, now we can see their talents and their abilities, and that's what's happening.
Georgi Bashanishvili had a record game on Saturday. Ayo Dosunmu, as a guy who's been emerged as a freshman as your number, probably your best player overall, Coach. How is that the way college basketball just is? You accept that freshmen are going to lead the way, and is that the way it is in your locker room? And what comes with that? Is it going to be inconsistency that you just come to expect, given their explosiveness?
Well, I don't think it's the norm. I think there's a few programs. I think you look at Duke but for the most part, you look around the Big Ten, and you've got veterans leading them. It starts at Michigan State. It starts at Michigan. It starts at Wisconsin. You've got a lot of veterans leading those teams. But our guys are high character guys. They're mature beyond their years. They're very, very intelligent in terms of basketball IQ and feel, and then they're not afraid to lead, and that's transcending into our locker room.
When you talk about establishing a hierarchy, understanding who the go-to players are, part of it is really solidifying that backcourt, right? Is that which has been more instrumental in the way this season has gone, getting the backcourt together or establishing the hierarchy of where to go with the ball?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the one thing that we knew we were going to have a good backcourt. Andres Feliz, you put him in that mix, and as a junior college transfer, obviously Io and then Trent's a returning All Big Ten player, and we knew those guys were going to be good. Now it was putting the pieces together and defining roles, and then, you know, the emergence of Georgie, you know, how he fits with Kipper Nichols, how he fits with Theron Jordan, how he fits with, you know, Adonis De La Rosa, kind of establishing some roles and some identity is what has taken some time, just as it's taken some time for our backcourt to start to gel. And, you know, late in the last few games, we've had all three of those guards in together.
Second year of your program at Illinois, Brad, when you look around and you see the, you know, the acceptance level from your players of what you're trying to sell, what you're trying to instill in them, how would you describe that? And what are you finding in terms of recruiting? Is Illinois basketball resonating again with the recruits and the ones that matter?
Well, I think the one thing, it's very gratifying to know that you've got young people who want to play for the name on the front of the jersey. They're always going to represent themselves. And yet it's guys who care. I think it's what makes Io and Georgie, and this, and not just them, it's transcending into our other guys. You know, they're not just thinking about themselves. You know, it's well documented. Io called me and invited me to lunch and then was mad when he couldn't buy. that's a young guy that's thinking about somebody other than himself. And he's done that with all of his teammates. I get text messages all the time from Georgie just asking me how my day's going. And when you get guys that mature, that they're not wrapped up in their own stuff, that's the culture that we want. We want to be concerned about our teammates and create that family atmosphere, and that will withstand the test of time. And that's what we've worked really hard at trying to accomplish.
Tell us a little bit more about Georgie. I mean, it's, you know, he's put this team on his back a couple times here, including the Rutgers game. How did you find him? What's the future hold? I mean, this is a really good player.
Yeah, he's a really good player that nobody knew about. And we went to see another young man and a junior in a game last year before the Big Ten tournament. And we'd been recruiting one of his teammates. And I had not seen the other young man play. And 5 minutes into the game, I looked at one of my assistant coaches and I said, "Who's that?" And he told me a little bit about his background. And I said, "We're offering him after the game." And it was his passing, his talk, his communication. You could see his character. You could see he cared about winning. And he was playing against a McDonald's All-American. And literally just wouldn't let the kid catch. I mean, dominated the game from a defensive standpoint. And you know, had no idea at that point that he averaged 9 points a game in high school. And I asked him, I said, "You know, why do you score so few points?" And he said, "Because I can impact the team more with my passing. We have plenty of guys to score." And that was such a mature answer, and a guy that I knew was about team instead of himself. And you know, from then on, we recruited him. He became a priority, and he's turned into not just a really good player, I mean, a fabulous player as a freshman.
Joined by Illinois coach Brad Underwood. And coach, it's almost like a Illini basketball tradition that the coach of Illinois basketball is sort of criticized in Chicago for not recruiting the city hard enough. I mean, Io comes from Morgan Park, and yet you've taken some hits this season about not having a big enough presence in the CPS games or in the city in general. You've responded to those. I know that it's still a priority to you, but how would you describe, you know, your presence in Chicago in terms of recruiting and the priority that it holds on your recruiting list?
Yeah, it's a very high priority. There's no question. We were just all had our whole staff up there last weekend for games, and you know, there's some very, very talented young guys coming up, and you know, absolutely, we want to make sure that train rolls south, and you know, we make Illinois a viable option for not just every kid in Chicago, but in this state. And you know, they've got to fit the pieces of our puzzle and what we're putting together. And if they do, we're going to recruit them and make them a priority. But we're up there as often as we can be up there.
And it doesn't get any easier for you. You go to Ohio State on Thursday, and a week from today you're at Wisconsin. You know, road games never easy. Road games in the Big Ten are always difficult.
Well, it's the best conference in the country, and there's no doubt about that this year. You've got top to bottom, I think you've got every team in the top 100 RPI. You know, the KenPom is just loaded. I think that the top 16 seeds they unveiled, six of them are Big Ten teams.
Right.
So it speaks volumes to how good our conference is. But when you travel in the Big Ten, you're going to play in front of a packed house. You're going to play in front of a raucous student section and crowd, and it gets very challenging and difficult. And yet, it's the next step for us is a road game in Ohio State, and a game we didn't play very well in, and we played in the United Center, and we're an improved basketball team as they are, and we're going to have to show up and put our hard hats on and go fight.
Big picture doesn't affect Illinois, but what did you think about the release by the NCAA selection committee of the early seeds on Saturday? Did it sort of take away some of the suspense that people will have for Selection Sunday, or do you like it?
Oh, I don't think it matters one bit. I think it's something for you guys to talk about. There's over 1,000 games left, and so much is going to change, and it can change game to game, day to day. But there's nothing better than Selection Sunday, hearing your name called and finding out where you're at. And, you know, I think this league's going to have 9, 10, we'll see, maybe more, teams in it this year. And it's justified. This league is really good. And our non-conference schedule was beefed up, and moving to 20 league games has added, drama, and teams aren't going to be 500 and get in, and that's something that's coming with the expansion of the number of league games.
Coach, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
That's Brad Underwood, the Illinois basketball coach, and a couple big wins for them. I mean, if you didn't know that the Michigan State win was a big one, certainly being able to beat Rutgers in overtime almost gives it more credibility, right?
Yeah, you want to back that up with they're not having a great year, but this certainly it will be their best week of the season.
And they got young players, so the future is bright.
And a little under the radar, but that totally. Maryland win was huge. Mm. Earlier in the year, you could make the argument that they're one of the better teams in this tough conference.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We have all the guys that we need. We have so much trust in this group, and we're so close. We went through a lot of adversity last year, had dealt with some injury stuff, so health is number one for our guys. But if you look at it, I mean, our starting five, we could do some special things if we get on a roll, kind of like we were at the second half of last year.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Kyle Hendricks, and he's talking about the team on the field. And let's get out to Julian Green. He's the Vice President of Communications and Community Affairs. He's already out in Arizona. Good morning, Julian. How are you?
Morning, Julian.
Good morning. How's it going, gentlemen?
We're doing great. And Julian, you know, we know that you guys, you and Tom, had a meeting with the Council on American Islamic Relations. I believe it went about 90 minutes or so, according to reports. You know, this is an awkward situation with Joe Ricketts emails being released and the reaction from both the team, from Joe Ricketts, from MLB, and there's some fences to be mended. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think so. I think I want to add that it wasn't just the council of American Islamic Relations Care. It was a number of groups. We reached out to several groups in the Chicago area that represent the Chicago Muslim community, and a number of organizations that are doing good work. And I just want to make sure that acknowledge those organizations as well, you know, what we wanted to do or attempting to try to do is try to, you know, yes, mend fences and try to take a, you know, very sad, hurtful, offensive situation and turn it into something good. Even though that obviously it wasn't Tom or the Cubs to make those comments. I think Tom was proactive and is self-aware to know that, you know, obviously the name being associated with the team, that, you know, felt like, look, there's an opportunity here to make sure that we can step out and help in terms of eradicating Islamophobia. And, you know, because I think a number of, you know, what we heard from the organization is that, you know, it's not only just the emails and what was said, it helps embolden those who are using that, you know, that hurtful and offensive comments. And, you know, they played for us, guys. They played for us a couple messages of people calling to their organizations, mm-hmm. threatening and, you know, hurling racist comments. And, you know, it was difficult to hear. It was emotional for both me and Tom. And I think, you know, anything that we can do as an organization to try to step up and try to help with that, I think is something that, you know, certainly we're looking forward to and, you know, want to be a part of.
So you acted swiftly to face these people, Julian, and Tom's out there in front of them and hearing what they had to say. And as you point out, the emotion was real and palpable. What's the message that you want them to hear? What were you saying and what was Tom saying in terms of, you know, what's next and what's now?
Sure. You know, look, the easiest thing you could say would be, hey, well, look, it wasn't me that said it. It was, you know, Joe's emails. And he didn't say that. You know, he said that, hey, look, I understand that, you know, as a member of the family, it's tough to separate. And what we can do now is, you know, with their help, is try to take concrete, meaningful steps. I will sit here and tell you, I think one of the things that Tom and I agreed is, look, we didn't come in the meeting to say, hey, look, let's stand up for a photo op with a check to give to an organization, nor did they, you know, obviously, you know, recommend that. We also said, look, we're not going to try to paper over this or step up and say, hey, look, let's do Muslim night at the ballpark. We're not looking to, you know, paper over this and for a photo op. You know, if we're going to be involved and take some concrete and actionable steps, we want to make sure that it's thoughtful, that it's meaningful, that it's not tone deaf. And so we didn't come up with any 5-point plan at the meeting, but I think it was productive. It was positive. We will likely have more meetings. The one thing, guys, I'd share with you and Tom and I said is that, you know, sitting around the table, it was very constructive. And, you know, we kind of said to ourselves, like, wow, wouldn't it have been great to engage with some of these organizations prior to some of this happening, because when you hear about the work that they're doing and hearing about the things that they face, one thing that they said, it wasn't about the email. It's about the reality they face every day. And I'll share with you guys, as an African-American male in this city or who lives in this country, when you hear from, you know, your other, when you hear from the Muslim brothers and sisters, and a woman who came up to me after the meeting and said, look, I was driving down the street with my kids in the car and someone hurled the N-word, you know, at me and my kids. And the kids are like, what is that? What are you talking about? And, you know, it just shows you that there's still, you know, a lot of work to be done. And not only for African-Americans and Hispanics, but in Muslims, just in terms of trying to help fight racism and specifically Islamophobia. And I think that's something that we can help be a part of, and something that hopefully over the next, in the coming weeks and the days, you know, we could take a real meaningful step. And that's a good thing. You know, regardless of the words and the emails that have been released, you know, I think we can really take some action steps to do some good. And I think that's something that we're looking forward to.
When it's nice to hear that there's a plan in place, that you're planning on continuing this sort of thing. How do you deal with this with the players? Have you already done that? Has this issue been addressed? I believe they speak with the media tomorrow for the first time. I'm sure they're going to be asked about it.
Sure. We're taking one step at a time. You know, look, as you said, we got out this immediately. We wanted to have a meeting very quickly. We didn't want to let any grass grow under this, so we just met Friday. You know, I just got down here last night. Tom will be coming down to Arizona probably in a week or so. You know, most of our media friends will be coming down today in the next couple of days, the players, pitchers and catchers report on the 13th. So, you know, yes, all that to say that, yes, we will be addressing it forthright, proactively with the players. I think Tom wants an opportunity to address the players. He does it every year anyway, so this is nothing out of the ordinary for him to, you know, have an audience with the players and have an opportunity for him to, you know, say, hey, look, what are we planning to do? Here's what you heard, and here's what we're planning to do about it. And, you know, there's no one, you know, like I have the utmost confidence in Tom to, you know, let the players know what's in his heart and in his mind and, you know, how we plan to go about fixing it.
Those are all productive conversations, Julian, and I think important ones. In terms of productive dialogue with Major League Baseball, has that happened yet? Do you feel like there's a need to be proactive there? Because I think people from the outside look at this and they wonder, even though I think some of us may understand it, where does Joe Ricketts end and Cubs ownership begin? And because are they separate entities, or how do you disassociate yourself with the guy whose money helped buy the team?
Well, I'll start with the latter first. I mean, I think what we've tried to make clear that Joe is not part of the ownership structure. He's not involved in the day-to-day operations, if you will, of the team. And, you know, that you know, Tom and Laura and Todd, Pete, who are the board of directors who run the team. We have been proactive. Not only did we reach out, we were talking to the Chicago Muslim community. You know, we've been talking to the league, and, you know, you got to reach out. We've reached out to some of our sponsors and partners. I mean, look, when I talk about the culture, you know, we have certainly not built a culture of divisiveness at the Cubs. And that's one of the things that I hang on to as a member of this organization. And, you know, that, you know, when I look at the past 8 years that I've been here with this organization, you know, it has been one of inclusion and making sure that everyone feels like they have a seat at the table, that they're, you know, that they're not marginalized no matter who you are, of all race and backgrounds. Believe that, and I'm a part of it because I've seen it happen, and I know this family. At the same time, when I talk about culture, this is a culture to take action, a bias for action, to try to deliver and find solutions. And so we're not waiting to hear from the league. We're not waiting to hear from our sponsors. We're not waiting to hear from our customers. We're being very proactive. You know, certainly we've heard from our fans and needed to address that, and we've heard from, you know, partners. And, you know, so in the last week, yes, you know, we're just not waiting for the incoming fire to come our way. You know, we're trying to take demonstrative steps to make sure that, you know, people understand. Again, we can say all we want, Hall, about, yeah, this, you know, so I'm going to say, look, it wasn't me. It was my father's words. But at the same time, again, I think that's difficult to separate because people associate the name with the Cubs brand. So we take that and say, all right, well, here's an opportunity to, you know, use the power of this brand to be very proactive to fight a very real and problematic issue in this country, and see if we can do some good about it. And, you know, we'll see. And certainly there are going to be those who just say, like, you know, maybe the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, and maybe they accuse us and will never disassociate, you know, Tom or the Cubs from those statements, and that's okay. We can only control what we can control, and I think the piece that we can control is what can we do with these organizations to ensure and then make sure our fans know that, you know, we're committed to making sure that, you know, from a harassment free and abuse free, free from discrimination, and make sure that we can try to turn this into some good.
Julian, appreciate you talking to us, and appreciate you getting involved in this stuff. And, you know, again, I don't know that there is a rule book or a kind of a blueprint to follow when something like this happens. Certainly not an anticipated story, but being proactive and trying to get after this stuff, as you say, on a grassroots level, in not letting any time pass is laudable.
Yeah, look, I just want to make sure our fans know that, you know, it is certainly appropriate for people to, you know, be hurt and to be offended, and that's okay. We're not going to try to explain this away. You know, he said it and I didn't. You know, we're going to accept it. It certainly leaves a bit of a stain you know, on the organization. But, you know, we have a great opportunity to build some bridges and help in this fight, you know, for something that people live every day. And look, when you hear from people, you know, from Muslims who grew up as Cubs fans, you know, the one thing that brings people together is sports, right? The one thing that you leave your politics, you leave your religion, you leave all that at the door, because you can walk into Wrigley Field or any stadium or ballpark in America and say, when I walk in, I am the same as anyone else in this country, regardless of income level or status. And, you know, when that gets broken or, you know, at least injured, right? It just, it's certainly hurtful and it's harmful, because, you know, everyone wants to wrap their, you know, cloak or their flag around take their team flag and wrap it around themselves. And we certainly understand that, you know, hey, look, it's, something that we want to work on. But again, like I said, we're not here to try to step away or separate and say, you know, look, you know, it was him, not us. You know, we're not trying to do that. We're just saying, look, we're going to accept it. You know, we have an opportunity to do something for fans or people who felt like they were hurt, that felt like they were offended, rightfully so, and try to make some good out of it.
Thanks, Julian.
All right.
Take care. Guys.
Appreciate
God
it.
God bless.
Bye.
That's Julian Green, the Vice President of Communications and Community Affairs for the Cubs. And
yeah. He's had a difficult offseason with a lot of things in the news for the Cubs that have nothing to do with baseball. And I think that's the challenge with a guy who is in his role, the director of public relations or community affairs. You look at everything they're involved with, this latest Joe Ricketts controversy, the Tom Tunney issue. The Ricketts went after Tom Tunney in terms of that election. That's a political thing. There are other political interests that are being served that get a lot of attention. The Addison Russell controversy is going to come sooner rather than later, as soon as he reports to Arizona. The TV deal, which has not been announced, which is going to probably include a broadcast partner in Sinclair, that's going to create its controversy. The Cubs have gone from the Ricketts resisting the ideal of being lovable losers to being intolerable winners. I mean, some people are just tired of all this stuff that has nothing to do with the baseball team.
We're going to take a moment. We'll bring in Dan and Connor next, and we'll do a little transition. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.